AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Sellers stayed in control of the grain markets for most of the week, but the markets wrapped up with a round of corrective gains today. Cattle trade was mixed ahead of the cattle on feed report, and wow, you know, hogs didn't rally much this week at all, but ended today with solid gains.
Live from the ongoing conversation convoy via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with wheat trader Rick Nazar. I'm the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, you know, I don't know if anybody ordered up all this wind.
No.
But if you did, if you did put the order in, maybe reconsider a little bit. Maybe dial it back just a touch.
You know what? Here's the thing. When we were in Iowa over the weekend and earlier this week, I did sign up for a free trial of Strong Wind. I might have forgotten to cancel it. I see my credit card has already been charged for another month. I'm sorry. My hands are tied. It's my fault.
You know, it's the thoughtlessness.
I know.
What bothers me.
The inattention to detail.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Exactly.
I'm just sick about this.
It's windy out there, dude.
Yeah, not bad down here, I'll tell you.
No?
No, not at all. No.
51 degrees. We've got the sun shining. There's some high clouds out there, and the wind is a howling out there. We've got sustained winds at like 30 miles an hour. Now, it's gonna help dry things out from the rains that we had earlier this week, and maybe get some guys back in the field a little bit sooner, maybe even before we see another round of rain start next week. But holy smokes, it's a bit rough out there. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That is Davis. Mm-hmm. We are going to have a conversation with Rick Nazar today. Rick is an independent wheat trader, and we're going to pick his brain on what is going on out there. It is report day, Davis.
Yes. What do you got for us?
Cattle on feed report was just released at the top of the hour. Mm-hmm. Total number of calves placed in March into feedlots, down 12.35%. Down 12.35%. Trade was looking for a 7% decline.
Whoa.
In placements in March. Marketings down 13.71%. The trade was looking for an 11.9% decline. So marketings were slower than expected, but placements were even more slower than expected. And the end result is a total inventory cattle on feed on April 1 up 1.49% from year ago. Trade expected a 2.1% increase from year ago. So a little bit of a friendly number in there, I guess, in the monthly cattle on feed report.
All
right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get to the markets. What do you got?
Well, Chip, corrective gains in the wheat market accelerated after mid-morning with soft red winter wheat futures leading the way to the upside. Wheat futures extended gains even with the U.S. dollar index working up from session lows. The dollar traded on both sides of unchanged late in the grain session. July SRW wheat opened nearly steady and near session lows, then rallied through the 10-day moving average into a new high for the week before setting back to close well off session highs and at the 10-day average. Buying was less enthusiastic in hard red winter futures, but the contract did trade back onto the plus side of pivotal 580. July HRW wheat futures 7.75 cents higher at 583. July SRW wheat up 13.75 cents to 566.75. July spring wheat closed at 652.5. That's up 9.5 cents, Chip.
Yeah, those short-term moving averages, that is something that we don't talk a whole lot about in the market commentary. But I'm glad that we are right now because they are having an influence on what the day-to-day price action is in the wheat trade and the corn trade and soybean trade in all of those grain markets. So it's important to keep an eye on it. On the week, July SRW wheat down 4 cents. July HRW wheat down 4 cents. And July spring wheat up 2.5 cents.
Well, corn futures reversed yesterday's losses and posted the first higher close of the week today. After Midwest rains kept pressure on corn prices earlier this week, corrective buying gets much of the credit for today's price gains. Demand also showed up, Chip. Mexico bought 23,000 metric tons of old crop and nearly 194,000 metric tons of new crop corn this week. And trade sources indicate South Korea was back in the corn market overnight as well. Domestically, EPA announced this morning it will allow E15 sales this summer. That should be good news in corn for ethanol demand for the rest of the marketing year. May corn futures were 6.75 higher, 4.33.5. July corn up 6.75, 4.43. December corn futures closed at 4.66.25. That's up 6.25 cents.
It wouldn't have surprised me a bit if the corn market would have gone down on the day that they announced the E15 availability for this summer. You know, the buy the rumor, sell the fact kind of thing in corn. But instead, we had a nice solid gain to wrap things up. And on the week, not so much gains. July corn on the week down 4.25. December corn down 5.75.
USDA this morning also announced the sale of 13,500 metric tons of old crop and 108,000 metric tons of new crop soybeans for delivery to unknown destinations. July soybean futures opened slightly lower and near session lows, spiked support at yesterday's low before reversing to post a high range close. Much needed rains in the Midwest this week encouraged selling in bean futures, but a wetter forecast for next week is beginning to raise concerns about a slow start to the growing season for some areas. May beans were 16.25 cents higher at 11.50.5. July beans up 16.75 cents to 11.65.75. November beans closed at 11.61, up 11.75 cents. Delayed planting, ain't that a kick in the teeth?
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? Kind of struggle city in the soy complex this week. July soybeans down 21 cents. November soybeans down 15.25. July bean oil down 151 points. And July soybean meal down 90 cents a ton.
July cotton futures yesterday spiked support at the December 21 low and recovered for a mid-range close. July futures today posted an inside trading day with a close above the opening range, and that's a signal for selling interest in cotton futures has been exhausted, at least for the time being. July cotton today 41 points higher, 81.02, Chip.
Yeah, on the week, July cotton down 357 points. Yeah. Another tough week.
Well, on your livestock's early buying and feeder cattle futures turned into late session profit-taking and a modestly lower close. Meanwhile, June live cattle turned early losses into a slightly higher close. June cattle traded on both sides of 175 each day this week, Chip. June live cattle today, 30 cents higher, 175.67.5. October futures up 2.5 cents to 176.75, and May feeder futures were down 55 cents to 242 even. And on the snout side, June hogs traded on both sides of 102.50 each day this week and used that level as a launching pad for today's short covering rally. May hogs were $1.50 higher, 96.22.5. June hogs up 2.12.5 to 104.82.5, Chip.
Yeah, nice price performances in meats this week. June live cattle futures up $4.20.
Okay.
May feeder cattle up $7.80. And June lean hog futures up $1.85. And just to recap, got what I would call a price-friendly cattle on feed report here this afternoon. Total inventory on April 1 up 1.49% from year ago. The trade expected a 2.1% increase. Placements in March down 12.35%. Marketings in March down 13.71%. Rick Naser, independent wheat trader, is our guest today. We'll get that conversation started next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, you know one of the cool freaking things about AgriTalk?
Is there? Are there things?
Oh,
there are?
Come on. There's a lot of things, but one of them is getting to meet and getting to know some really cool people.
Oh, absolutely.
People that I haven't known before.
That'll get
Yeah, I love it. The number of guest analysts. There's a lot of guest analysts that come on the show that I've never met face to face. The only time that I've ever talked to them is on the air, but I'm getting to know them. And one of those guys that qualifies for that is Rick Nazer. He is an independent wheat trader, and we got to know each other about a year ago. Started sharing some emails back and forth. Got him on the show to talk about what's going on in wheat trade, and I'm glad to get him back on right now. Rick, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks. You guys are too kind. I think you and my four-year-old nephew think I'm cool, so I appreciate it.
Well, you know, me and four-year-olds, we sometimes kind of act alike.
It's a consensus.
Me too.
It's cool. It's cool, and which works out really good for me because I've got four-year-old grandkids, so... You know,
they're the best.
That's right. That's right. Rick, how's things going? Everything okay?
Yeah, just down here, sunny Florida, paradise, 81 degrees. We don't have the wind you guys have, but there's a few clouds in the sky. It's beautiful down here.
Yeah. Too bad you don't have much of a team there in Miami this year.
We thought our hockey team just made the playoffs.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah. No, it's baseball season for me, so that's what I'm paying attention to. Okay, talk to me about this wheat trade. What's got your attention in here right now? What do you like? What do you not like?
Well, I don't know if there's anything I like or don't like, but let's just talk about what people are kind of discussing in the back rooms here. We've got dryness creeping into the hard wheat belt. Now, I know the Euro has got some good moisture in for Oklahoma over the next 7 days, and that should pretty much make that crop. So the Oklahoma crop should be okay. But guys are starting to look at Western Kansas and wondering when's the next rainfall going to come in. So at least on the U.S. domestic side of things, we're starting to see guys take down their hard wheat crop size numbers. The high end was probably in the 800s, and this week, 740s to 750s started floating around. Okay. And of course, we'll know more next month when we get boots on the ground there. But Western Kansas definitely needs a drink. And if it doesn't get a drink, you're going to start seeing some production estimates come down. Now, the question is, at least on the U.S. balance sheet side of things, does that even really matter? And the answer is probably not. You know, you can increase exports by 100 million bushels, which are still incredibly low historically. And you're still looking at a monster carryout.
Right.
So we could lose some of this crop and still be okay. Switching over to the east side, soft wheat belt conditions are incredibly good. And if as long as we get a overall yield above 70, 72, we should be looking at another pretty large crop and a pretty comfortable ending stocks for soft wheat.
Yeah.
Spring wheat's the interesting one. Gun to my head, I would say the USDA is probably too high on the spring wheat planted acreage. I think with the weather that's been in there, the lack of snowpack, these guys are probably going to go fence row on corn, considering the last couple of years they haven't been able to. So that would be kind of the overall view on what's going on in the US side. But probably the more important issue that is really starting to be discussed is dryness in southern Russia. If you look at the all the weather models, they've got really nothing in the next 2 weeks for Russia. temps are incredibly high, and you're starting to hear some whispers that the crop size is not going to be, not going to be there unless we can get a drink.
Was it today? So VCon took a million ton off of the Russian crop. Is that right?
I think so, and I think you're going to start seeing more and more of that. Now, this is a moving target here a little bit. It's not as easy as going, hey, it's hot and dry in Russia. Let's rally wheat up a buck. There's a significantly large carryout of wheat in the pipe sitting in Russia, as well as they came into this spring with incredibly good subsoil moisture. So this is going to be a moving target for the next 30 days or so for the market to kind of figure out. Now, I think if you start getting into May 10th and the forecast remains dry, then it's going to perk up a lot of people's interest here.
Okay.
You had planting issues in Europe that you've already got estimates on the French crop size lower year over year. And what this all means really at the end of the day is, does it bring more demand back into the hard wheat balance sheet? And the question is, we don't know yet. And we're not going to know for quite a while, simply because there are large carryouts both in the European Union and in the Black Sea that they will try to push that out, especially if global prices rally from here. And what you could end up seeing is if you do get that hard wheat demand, assuming that the crops are problematic, it'll come in the back half of the year. But those are the things that the market's looking at now. And the market, we got first notice day coming up in a couple of weeks. And so there's just a lot of, it's just a quagmire at the moment.
Okay. All right. You know, if it turns into an issue in Russia, we might have to do some sort of a reminder course on exactly what Russia means to the global wheat trade. Because, Rick, it's been 10 years since Russia's had a crop problem, isn't it?
2014 was probably the last time I can remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So Russia is the price maker for global wheat.
Yes.
It is the supplier of cheapest supply, and therefore they dictate global wheat prices. So right now in the last few months, we had Russian wheat prices dip down to the 180, 190 dollar metric ton levels. And now they're slightly above 200, 205 to 210. So we've had a significant rally in prices. Now, the question is that because it's seasonalities, you know, the farmer isn't willing to sell here in March, or is it because there's crop issues? I think it's both sides of that coin. We've seen Matif rally as well. Matif, which is European wheat futures, traded in Paris. That typically is reflective of what's going on in Russia. Traders use that as a proxy for Black Sea wheat prices and so on and so forth. Now, we've got Matif sitting here, at 215 euros a ton, and it's consolidating here significantly. And I think what the market's waiting to see is those next 2 weeks of forecast, the first 2 weeks of May, to say, do we have to rally from here or we can start selling off? All of these things are trying to put a floor under U.S. wheat prices, because U.S. is a price taker, not a price maker on the wheat paradigm. Yeah. Russia is the price maker. Yeah. So whatever happens with Russian wheat prices will happen here in the U.S.
Right. I'm finding it difficult. This is kind of a weird conversation, Rick, because we're talking about Russia, and the phrasing isn't Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine isn't even in your conversation at this point. Why?
Because Russia will export 45 million to 50 million tons of wheat next year.
Yeah.
That's what they want to do, and that's what they're programmed to do. And they are the biggest. They're the big mama in the house.
Oh yeah.
So Ukraine prices will just mirror whatever Russia does, and so will Romanian prices, and so will French prices, and so will U.S. prices.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we keep hearing about what a mess it is trying to get Ukrainian grains, not just wheat, but grains and oil seeds out of Ukraine and through neighboring countries. And it's kind of more than ruffled feathers in those neighboring countries over there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a highly subsidized crop that's being shipped into your country at a lower price than the stuff that you can grow it at the than the price that you can grow it at, yeah, it's going to ruffle some feathers and it's going to take away from some significant from otherwise good demand that you would have for your own crop. But I think what we found is, and I think we learned this last summer, the market no longer really cares about the Ukrainian wheat and or corn supply. The market is does what the market does. It figured out how to get the bushels it needed out of there, how to move bushels into markets that it can move into, and the market just figured it out. And I mean, last year we were fighting Ukraine headlines with missiles firing into Crimea, and you would sit here and you would think, okay, wheat's got to be up 20 cents, and wheat would trade down 10 that same day. And that's when you just realize the market just doesn't care because the global market has figured it out. I think for all grains, they've figured it out. I mean, if you need corn, you go to Brazil, the US. If you need wheat, you got a million places to go to. And heck, China just gave you a whole bunch.
That's where I want to, one of the spots I want to go to in the next segment here. We're in the middle of a conversation with Rick Naser. Rick is an independent wheat trader. So if Russia does have problems, will China regret making the canceling some of the purchases of U.S. wheat? And where is this demand going to come from? We'll continue with Rick next.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 7¾ cents higher, 583. July SRW wheat up 13¾ cents to 566¾. May corn futures were 6¾ higher, 433½. December corn futures closed at 466¼. That's up 6¼ cents. May soybean futures 16¼ cents higher, 1150½. November beans closed at 1161. That's up 11¾ today. July cotton was 41 points higher at 8102. On your livestock's June fat cattle 30 cents higher today at 175.67½. May feeders down 55 cents to 242 even. And June lean hog futures up $2.12½ to close at 104.82½. Try ProFarmer.com.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Man, oh man, already? Dude, yeah. Can you believe it?
It seems like just 3 days ago it was Monday-ish.
Monday? Is that what it felt like for you?
Wow. Yes. It was striking.
Well, I tell you what, the first week, the first part of this week just crept by. I didn't think that it was ever going to get past us. And,
yeah,
and
I know.
It was going on. And the second half of the week just flew by, dude. I don't know what happened.
I understand.
Really?
We'll leave it unspoken.
We'll leave it unspoken. Thank you. We're in the middle of a conversation with Rick Naser. He is an independent wheat trader. Rick Davis has got a great question. It's a topic that we can go in a couple of different directions with. Russia's been using their wheat supplies and their wheat exports to to build relations with some countries that they're going to need support from going forward. And I'm looking at some of the poorer countries in Africa in particular, but if they can, if Russia can get those countries on their, you know, quote unquote, their side, it's only going to help them in the future. Do you think that's part of Russia's overall strategy on this?
On what? On international relations and foreign policy?
Yes.
Yeah, I think if you look at the list, the top five or top 10 importers of Russian grains, I mean, they all have friendly relations with Russia. But as far as being, I think their arms deals, you know, like for Iran, for example, are a pretty, a much bigger issue. But to be fair, in that same breath, they do a lot of private wheat deals with Iranian merchants when Iran is short of grain. So yes, I mean they use food as a foreign policy aid.
There you
go. Not much different than the U.S. does.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's just that when if Russia runs into some production problems this year, I don't know. Do they start to pick? Well, of course they're going to start to pick and choose. It's whoever's willing to pay the most for the product is the one that's going to end up getting that product, right?
Yeah, I think we are way past the 2010 Russian grain embargo that Glencore have lobbied for. We're not doing those things. They might give away some cheaper cargoes to some smaller African countries that are in specific needs, but you know, the Egyptians, the Iranians, the Iraqis, if they have to come to the table and buy, they're going to most likely pay market price.
Right. Okay. All right. China had me all fired up earlier this year, Rick. They were coming in. They were, I think it was a total of three daily export sales announcements that we got of US SRW wheat into China. And then they've just been, you know, canceling and taking those purchases off the books going forward. What's the game? Is it a game they're playing? What's happening?
You know, I don't think it's a game, and it's very hard to ever know for certain what communists like to do. But back in May, I mean, I think it was pretty clear that China was going to have to come to the U.S. to buy wheat. What I didn't realize was they were going to come to the U.S. to buy wheat at the same time that France was offered. So there's some speculation within the market that when they purchased a lot of that wheat, they were supporting an outright futures long as well. So I mean, there could have been some malfeasance in some of those purchases. I'm not going to sit there and say they didn't need all the wheat, but at the same token, when they were canceling the cargoes, wheat prices went higher as the cancellations came out, simply because the Chinese were short futures and they assumed that the market would go lower on their cancellations. But aside from maybe the games that a central buying arm may or may not do in the futures market, what is going on with these cancellations? And I think it's primarily due to political reasons, domestic political reasons.
Yeah.
You know, as a farmer, once again, if you're sitting in Poland and your government's importing Ukrainian wheat, it's not really much different than if you're sitting in Guangzhou and your government's importing, you know, wheat from outside of your borders that may or may not suppress the prices of your own domestic crop. Mm-hmm. So I think that has something to do with it. You know, they've rolled cargoes in France. They've canceled stuff out of Australia. I mean, this was a big surprise to the market when China last, it was just 1 year ago that China became the world's largest wheat importer.
Yeah.
And now they're doing this. So I think it was a big surprise to the market. And now I don't think anybody really knows what China is going to do with wheat going forward, just like they don't really know what China is going to do with corn and soybeans going forward.
Right.
So I think it's a big mystery here. I think their domestic economic woes are fairly important. And I think it's just going to be the biggest question mark that is going to cloud the market going forward. Now, does it mean they're going to be opportunistic buyers if we get corn back down to 350, if we have this crop and we have bumper yields again? Well, maybe they start building up stockpiles again, because you still have the big overhang of Taiwan sitting there out in the universe that if that were to happen, you've got some ramifications most likely on trade. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do get these prices low enough coming out of this year's crop that they do come back in for some row crop, and maybe they do come back in for wheat. But right now, as of today, I don't think you can count on China being a large global importer of global wheat supplies after what they've done over the last 60 days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the story on China and in the wheat market is, I don't know if it's a complete 180, but it's doggone close to it on the story that it's telling us. And it threw a wet blanket over the entire market, right?
It was like a cannonball got fired right through the heart of the market.
Okay, more than a wet blanket. Yeah.
It caught a lot of traders off guard. I mean, you saw SIF basis go from 90 over to 40 over within a matter of weeks. I mean, when you lose 10 million bushels of demand literally overnight, it's a game changer.
Yes, it is. Yeah, you take 350 million to 400 million bushels of demand out of the market, and it is going to change things up. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. You mentioned First Notice Day coming up here, and you mentioned it in passing in the last segment, and I wanted to go back to it and just see if there's any significance to it. What do you see happening? Is there going to be any plays coming off of First Notice Day?
I think typically the pattern has been that the markets tend to sell off here coming into First Notice Day. It's been a pattern for a few years now. As a matter of fact, ironically enough that we're talking about China, coming into the First Notice Day on the December wheat contract, you could tell there was a significant large buyer below the market where the market wasn't able to break. It just broke into massive bids, and that was the Chinese exacting a futures position. It was plain as day. So you've got a large spec short in the market. That isn't necessarily going anywhere anytime soon, which is curious because you have the soft market blowing up. You've got metals markets blowing up. And the ag markets seem to not even care about the macro. And that's primarily because the supply and demand balance sheets for this year and next year are overly burdensome. And you've got a large South American crop that's coming online that you have to chew through. So it's a lot of moving parts, but First Notice Day, I mean, I kind of expect the market to sell off a little bit. And then I think come first week of May, we'll really get to see what the market wants to do as far as wheat's concerned. I think when you look at the corn and bean side of things, I mean, planting and potential overhang of burdensome stocks next year is going to put a blanket on it. But I think the wheat side of things, first week of May, we're going to start seeing some Russian forecasts. You're going to start seeing analysts come from 94 million, maybe down to 90 million on Russian wheat. If Western Kansas can't get a drink, you're going to start seeing cuts there. And I think what you're going to start seeing, I want to see how the market reacts over the next 2 weeks to see if we start making new lows, then okay, that's not a good sign. If we can continue to consolidate down here, the market's obviously pricing in some risk premium. And it's not really eager to sell off into brand new contract lows simply because of those unknowns. Does it mean it has to rally in the first weeks of May? Probably not. But if you start seeing Russian analysts come down to the 85 or even, oh boy, below that on crop issues next year, then things get very, very, very interesting very quickly. Yeah. And we'll know that after First Notice Day. We'll start seeing that first week of May, and then you're going to start getting boots in the ground in Kansas. And we're going to start getting a little bit better of a grasp of what this hard wheat crop could look like. So, yeah, First Notice Day, you've got a lot of positions that need to change hands. You have a lot of liquidation. You had 270,000 contracts, so open interest in May corn today, which was much higher, I think 70,000 contracts higher than last year. So, I mean, all these things have to liquidate. And when that happens, things get really funky really quick.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. 30 seconds here. What are you going to rely on for information on the Russian crop? Where does your attention go?
I mean, you just pull up the Euro model every day and just wait and see if they start putting rain in the forecast here. I mean, the GFS has been wetter, but it's been wetter past 2 weeks out, so nobody even pays attention to any of that stuff. The Euro has been consistently dry for the last 2 weeks, And the temperatures. The temperatures are, it's hot over there. It is hot. So you're going to start seeing some scuttlebutt, like I said, in the next 10 days about what's going on in Russia. You just got to watch global wheat prices.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Rick, these are great conversations. I hope you enjoy them as much as I do, buddy.
No, I do. I love coming on this show.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that you do. We're going to do it again. Thanks, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely, guys. Take care. Have a great weekend.
You bet. Rick Naser, independent wheat trader. Davis and I are going to put a wrap on this week. Coming up next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, on your Friday. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here with Chip Flory. Great conversation with Rick Naser.
Oh, yeah.
I think at the very beginning when I introduced him, I tried to make it a little too fancy and like tried to go with like Nazar or something like that.
Yeah,
Naser. It rhymes with laser. How cool is that?
It does, yeah.
You can't get around that, yeah.
Yep.
One thing was interesting. Well, several things, of course. The market no longer cares about Ukraine wheat or corn exports. Yeah, just whatever. And yet, Russia could. I mean, when we're talking about the price maker and the potential for, a short crop, maybe a production problem or something. That seems like maybe some of those headlines could come in and have an impact.
Yeah. Russia's the big dog.
Yep.
Ukrainian supplies, and I'm not, I mean, hey, the circumstances that have led to this are undesirable. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But Ukrainian supplies have turned into a pain in the butt in the region.
Yeah.
Like Rick said, they're moving into neighboring countries at highly subsidized levels that are creating all kinds of problems for Romanian farmers and Polish farmers and, keep going down the list.
Yep.
I understand that, but at the same time, I mean, the empathy that I've got for the Ukrainian farmers is off the chart. I mean, I cannot even imagine trying to farm and work and live in the kind of environment that they're living in and working in and farming in. It's terrible.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Agreed. Well, and then we've sort of talked about, Russia exporting to some of these less fortunate nations. So shall we say,
sure.
As part of sort of a goodwill. And I don't know, where did we get that idea? That Russia was out sort of on a goodwill export tour.
Oh, I know
tour.
Where. The conversation started, for me mm-hmm. anyway,
mm-hmm.
not at the 2024 Top Producer Summit, but at the 2023 Top Producer Summit.
Okay.
When I hosted a panel on international grain flows. Matt Roberts was part of the conversation. Dan Bossi was part of the conversation. but the one that had us turning and looking at the screen, because he wasn't with us on site in Nashville, but he was on the screen, was Ambassador Kip Thom. You know, pro farmer member, farmer from Indiana, but UN Ambassador Kip Thom, when he started talking about grain flows and how Russia was using its supply, its consistent supply of high quality wheat to make, quote unquote, make friends with some of those African countries. That was the first time that it really got on my radar, Davis, and made me think, this is a long, there is a long runway on this plan that Russia has got. They not only want to be the number one wheat supplier in the world, but they are going to use it for diplomatic purposes, and they are, and they have. So yeah, that was the first time that it, sorry, I bet you didn't anticipate such a specific answer.
No, I love it. Specificity is important. Yes. I guess just the thought is, okay, well, what if they come up short? Because, you know, it's not like Russia was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with all this wheat? We got to find somebody. They have humongoid countries that they supply wheat to already are and can afford to pay. Maybe that's the most important thing. Who can afford to pay for the higher price in the event
there's
of a Russian
shortfall? A lot of oil money coming back their way through wheat. There's no question about it. You know, and talking about Ukraine and how it fits in all this mix, I'm just going to mention this because this is something that I want to that I've been thinking about, and I want to talk about more going forward. And I don't know if the Chinese wheat purchase cancellations has anything to do with this or not. But remember when Ukraine was striking deals with China to barter product in exchange for Ukrainian wheat and corn and oil seeds? Ukraine was going to get Chinese widgets and stuff, mostly labor is would be what they would be importing, is, you know, because they would be importing goods that are manufactured in China, but they would be getting it in exchange for grains. I don't hear that hardly anymore, but I wonder if, because Ukraine is looking for a friend.
Yeah.
Have they restarted those conversations and trying to get back into the barter, and they are bartering with China, and that's why China is looking at some of the purchases that they've made and said, you know what, maybe we did too much. I don't know. That's a thought balloon that I'm starting to float out there.
Like, it's tricky as soon as you bring in China, because you just don't know.
Or Ukraine. Or Russia.
Yep.
Oh, dude, we got to get to it, don't we?
Yeah. Nice band.
I don't even have it in front of me yet.
In the
Do
6
you have
to 10
it in front
day.
Of you?
Yeah, we're looking below normal temperatures on the eastern and western seaboards of the United States, with the warm temperatures straight up the gut slot, hottest in Texas. 6 to 10 day precip outlook. Everybody except the eastern seaboard looks like has a chance for above normal precipitation there.
Yeah, that's April 25th through the 29th, so it's getting right into the end of the month. You want to talk about the end of the month? How about the 8 to 14 day? That's for April 27th through May 3rd. Got the above normal temperatures across the eastern three quarters of the country, including all of the Corn Belt, and above normal precipitation across all of the Corn Belt as well. Thank you so much for listening today. Come back on Monday morning. We're going to have a conversation with Machinery Pete right here on AgriTalk. Oh, and Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nag, too.